I
It's
had
a brutal winter so far.
I had too much rum on the weekend.
You know what? No, I'm having flashbacks to when I was working retail, and like half of my store, that Piccadilly Circus HMV, were in metal bands. And so these people were all in their 20s as well, maybe later 20s than I was at the time. But it was a legit, it must have been a British thing, but like a legitimate thing where they come in the day after a show and they'd all be like, I've got a cup of tea,
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 162 of the Player 2 Pixelcast. My name is Matt Houston. I'm hosting this evening's festivities. We're obviously going to be talking about all the crazy shit from the games news season, whatever we're calling it these days, Key 3 or whatever. And to do that, I'm joined by two wonderful people that don't mind to join on the Pixelcast on occasion. First up, we have a man who sees the world through a CRT scan line. How are we, Rob?
Yeah, we're good considering everything else. But yeah, it was a hectic season and many good trailers that popped out and amongst other news, which we'll get to later on, I guess.
Yes, awesome. And the other man is on a self-imposed spending ban. Because someone pinched his card, so he can't buy anything. Tim, how are you? Besides having no access to money,
I still have that thing.
Yeah,
still technically have the piece of plastic.
How are we?
I'd be better. Yeah, if I had. I mean, I presumably get that money back, but yeah, report this shit when it happens, guys.
So tonight, like I said, we're going to look at Key 3. We're going to look at the Xbox and Sony State of Plays and, you know, any other bits and pieces that popped up over the, you know, kind of the 6-7 days of conferences and things like that. But in the meantime, we've been playing games as we usually do. Rob, I couldn't think of any man more suited to review this game considering you basically live in the world anyway. So tell us about Tron.
Yeah, so Tron Catalyst, which is Devolver and Biffle Games.
Mike Biffle, yeah.
And thing coming out. So a couple of months back, I got the chance to do a preview of it, and I was really impressed. And so the full game's coming out. It should be out by the time the podcast is out, along with my review. So it's basically, it's a follow-on of sorts to Tron Identity, which is a game Biffle Games did a couple of years ago. That was more of a visual novel kind of thing. It's set in that world, which is its own server distinct from the ones in the original Tron and Tron Legacy.
We don't run into Jeff Bridges.
We don't. Yeah, so no Jeff Bridges.
No Jeff Bridges.
No Jeff, no Bruce.
But do we get 3D Homer? I was like,
no 3D Homer. So basically, in Catalyst, you're a program called Exo, who is a courier, and the game opens up, and you're doing a bunch of courier drops, like dropping off stuff to various people, and there's like the third one, which is the last one you got to do, and it like explodes, fade to black, and it turns out this thing is basically gives her a glitch, and what this glitch does is it allows her to like do a loop. So you get to a point, and you basically on PC it's like on controller it's hold down your right thumbstick. And you reset, and this becomes sort of part of the puzzle factor. So she's trying to work out what the heck has gone wrong. What is this thing doing against this, like the grid society is crumbling, like the equivalent of the bad guys who are a thing called Core are like stepping up being like jerks. There's a bunch of other factions, like one faction that's like, screw the users. We do our own thing. There's another faction that's sort of into them and all of that kind of stuff. And you sort of, so as she goes on this adventure, which is like isometric view, you get a mixture of puzzling exploration, and then you've got your combat fights, which are in these nice little arena battles where you'll get locked into a room with a bunch of enemies. And it's like, you know, it's like you'd expect in Tron Legacy, disc throwing, but also some melee stuff. And of course, everyone's favorite defensive move, the parry, makes an appearance. Like enemies will glow when they're about to attack and you hit Y or triangle to block them. Yeah. And you could do extra damage. As you go through the game, you also find like stuff that upgrades your, like gives you experience points that you can put towards a bunch of extra moves. So one of the moves I love that you unlock later on is when you throw your disc at, for a range attack, it can bounce off multiple enemies and strike them at like in sequence. So it'll go boom, 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 connect to a bunch and come back to you. And when you go into these fights as well, sometimes it throws up like a little challenge. So it's like, defeat this encounter in 30 seconds. And you get extra upgrade points for that. So it gives you a little bit of challenge. There's also some light cycle driving. Unfortunately, one bit is in an arena, but it's sort of like, oh, you've got to use it to escape.
Oh, there's no light cycle battles with the walls.
There is, but they're like, the main one that happens is you're in the city, which is like the second chapter. And so it's like all tight and twisty as you're trying to navigate like 90 degree corners and stuff. So it's sort of the bit that was a bit of a letdown because like I wanted that like that Tron Legacy style light cycle fight, and there really isn't that. And you can't do any disc attacks when you're on the light cycle. You've only got just like the ribbon, the trail. Yeah. And now, so like you press it, it spurts out for a bit and then you let go. You've got a boost. It's like you hold to charge it and use it. And you can also do like a side bump that never seemed to really feel right. I never really used that.
Mythal Games is hardly the biggest studio in the world. And they're generally very good at like managing what they can do and finding a creative way to make the thing work.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing. The story is the side of this that's really good. Like it's weird because I don't know if it's just because of times right now, but it reminded me a lot of that, a lot more than like, so, you know, there's always the sort of thing of, you know, the underclass sort of pushing up in the Tron movies, right? Both in the original and in Legacy. And a bit in the cartoon that Uprising, which is really good, actually, if you haven't seen it. It should be on D+. That was really good. There's always that sort of undercurrent thing. But in the story here in particular, it's really sort of pushed a bit more because there's a bunch of stuff that happens and you have to reunite a whole bunch of like you have to unite a bunch of people to help you at sort of the ultimate end. And it just reminded me of sort of that thing right now. There's some really good voice acting in there as well for these sequences. I didn't recognize the names of the cast, most of them. So I'm sure other people might. But it was all like really good voice acting. A lot of it's, you know, still like the kind of thing you would see in the other, like, I guess you like an Identity where it's like static poses and stuff. And not all like the main sequences are voice, but then there's bits where it's like little text messages that'll pop up on the side and a thing, which is again doing the resources stuff really well. I think like considering this is a lot bigger in scope than other games, Bithel games have done, they've done a really good job. I think it's a couple, like I think my only real complaint that I've put in the reviews, I think the last chapter was a little bloated. It could have been tightened up a bit, and I don't think much would be lost. But yeah, it's pretty good fun. I really enjoyed it. I had it on, like, if we, you know, we all, as we all do, the team, we do our 10 games we're looking forward to this year. That was definitely on my list. I remember it being there. So it's like, it's pretty much lived up to what I wanted. I really enjoyed it and definitely recommend it. The full write-up should be available once the pod is out. So
awesome.
Check that there.
Unreal. All right. Well, from one kind of cyberpunky future to another one, Tim, you've been playing with Idris Elba.
We have spoilers about that, but I guess we'll tell you that during the break, perhaps. I've had a storied history with my attempts to play Cyberpunk 2077. I don't know if I've gone into the pod before. I don't think I have, but I first very foolish me, because I knew better, and I bought a secondhand copy that was like fairly cheap. Late last year. And then remembered when I got home, I was like, oh, right, the Phantom Pain bit is a download code. So that's in the trash. I just should have bought a PS4 copy now. That would have been cheaper again. That would have been the same issue. So then it's like, okay, I'm going to put that aside and wait for the DLC to go on sale. So I don't feel like I could just completely screw myself over and then feel a little bit better, because since CD Projekt gets a little bit of my money a bit more directly.
Mm-hmm.
Although, bought it from a small indie-ish game store, so kind of never feel bad about buying a secondhand game from them because I'm supporting another business. Anyways, and then I kind of got a very cheap copy of Avatar. Still surprisingly great game, actually. And then so Cyberpunk just sat in the back burner for like 40 hours into the next year until eventually, like, caved and bought a PS5 Pro. So now money has no meaning anymore. It's like the fucking the disk drives were there, and it's like going, I just buy this now, and if I change my mind, I can sell it tomorrow. Like, these things are still very hard to get. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to stick with owning this thing. And I, like, you know, the transfer process actually went pretty smoothly. The game was already installed, but Cyberpunk is like, I'm going to start playing. And then kind of raced myself a little bit to the end when Assassin's Creed arrived. It's like, I kind of want to wrap this up. And then the credits rolled, and I was like, I never saw Regis Elba. I never saw a chance. And then I, like, spent a day researching this shit. And so basically, because, I mean, I bought a Japanese copy of the game. My main PlayStation Network account is actually UK, because I was living in London when I bought a PS3, and you just can't change that shit. And fortunately, product keys between PAL and AU actually kind of work. So every review I've ever done for Player 2 and before has actually gone into a UK account, and it's just worked fine.
Yep.
Same cannot be said about Japan and America and other parts of the world. That's just a clash of not compatible. But the main thing is, like, when you change everything over, you kind of have to set the accounts up again. And so what had basically happened is I'd set up my main account, as you do, but I had not gone into my kind of spare American account, which I used to get demos, my Japanese account, which I used for a couple of things. And you have to turn on a setting in these accounts manually to share your games. With the other accounts. So the DLC, which I had purchased and was installed on the hard drive,
didn't
was
work.
Never actually accessible to the account I was playing on. And there's no way I would know this, because it turns out when you buy the Phantom Pain, like, that actually becomes part of the splash screen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not it not being on a splash screen is not necessarily something you would notice unless you know specifically it's supposed to be there.
Yep.
Oh no.
So eventually, yeah, I, like, spent half a day, maybe a full day almost, probably bouncing between work and that, like, figuring this shit out, like, going, wait, what, how? And then, oh, it's there, and they're like, and I knew I'd fix it when I opened the game, because the title screen changed. So then I, like, played for, like, a few minutes, and then I kind of got this text message, which is supposed to happen after you finish this mission towards the end of the main game, because the DLC is tied to, like, a level cap, and if you go into it too early, you're just going to get owned.
Yep.
It's like, well, I guess my whole end game now is just not canon anymore. Which is fine. I'm probably, if I actually go through the end again, I think I'm going to change how I do that anyway.
It is very tempting to do that in Cyberpunk, let me tell you, because the first time I ended it, I went, fuck, I should have done things differently. So,
well, Cyberpunk, it's weird, just like the core game is not that long, and that's kind of part of the appeal. You can finish this game in 20, 25 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
But you really actually want to kind of, like, and it kind of encourages you to, like, soak in it. Like, you'll get a lot of stuff like, wait 2 days for a reply to this message.
Yeah.
And it does. The problem is, when you're at the end game and, like, maybe you've got, like, a couple of factions or whatever who you could side with, and you're just impatient to finish it, you just go with the one that's available instead of seeing things through. Because there's a lot to soak in there. Anyway, long and the short of it is that Phantom Pain is, like, okay, Cyberpunk 2077 now is actually
Phantom Liberty, not Phantom.
Yeah, Phantom Pain is also excellent. Phantom Liberty is fucking excellent.
Yeah.
It is easily the best content in this game.
Yeah, I've got to get to it.
And you didn't in your Switch review, because I would have noticed, because by all accounts, it really does push harder and the frame rate does start to tank.
Oh, there you go.
On the Switch 2 version,
You know, I couldn't spend another 60 hours getting there again.
No, you would need to spend like 30 hours to, like, go through and, like, get in there. But man, yeah, the Phantom Liberty is it. Like, oh, like, this is like them having figured it out and, like, being able to, like, tightly design shit. This feels, I'm saying Bloody Baron is maybe a bit too much, but it feels like they're, like, kind of clicking on that kind of level again. It's like, okay, we have linear quests that are going to matter in different ways, and it's going to split out into the open world and, like, kind of come back together again. And it's going to look fucking spectacular, because now we're not worrying about trying to develop for a base Xbox One anymore.
Yep.
And, yeah, everybody's right. It is just, like, really, really good. And Dogtown is also, like, a super interesting area. Like, it's kind of more, I guess, as you would expect from the name, like, run down, a bit more kind of cramped in. Which is great, because parts of it feel more familiar. One of my main issues with Cyberpunk is, like, that city looked spectacular, but I was lost every second of the fucking time.
I've played it a lot. I'm pretty good now at navigating. But yeah, I've got 100 and something hours in Cyberpunk. So
yeah. But no, Dogtown definitely, like, it I mean, I haven't gone over it as level design or like combed like what doesn't work, but it definitely grows a sense of familiarity with, I know like vaguely where I am, or like I recognize this spot and this spot and this spot a lot more clearly, as opposed to like just massive districts, like each corner makes a lot more sense. Yeah, the story stuff is really interesting, and it's like super fun, kind of throwback to like late 80s arcade video games, while also like actually having pretty good nuanced writing and performances at the same time, in ways that I cannot say more about than that, because again, this game has just gotten what is, by all accounts, a pretty impressive Switch 2 port.
Yep.
So even though it's 5 years old, I guess the DLC is a bit newer.
Yeah.
Like, it is still like kind of danger spoiler territory. But the short of it is, yeah, if like this has been on your list to play, like, one, if you're playing Cyberpunk, don't rush through it. Like, just put it in the background as your secondary game throughout course of the year. And two, it's a bit uneven at the beginning, but man, like, yeah, it is good fucking DLC. Like, this is what people want when they say
DLC.
Like,
yeah.
It's actually pretty meaty. It like injects extra content into like the rest of the game, and even that is some of the better extra content in the rest of the game. It does a very good job with like respecting the time where it will expect you to wait. Like, so of course you can actually just sleep through that if you really want to.
Yep.
But yeah, like getting to the end is like, oh wow, they really did make you make a couple of choices, and it makes you make hard roads, like a good couple of missions before the end where it's like, on fuck, man, like this is a clear V. Excuse the name pun, I guess. That wasn't intentional.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Witcher DLC, especially Blood and Wine, was fantastic as well. So they've got runs on the board as far as extra content for their games go.
No, yeah, I mean, both of those were pretty good. But yeah, the second one was better than the first.
Yeah, all right then. Well, I can't think of any reasonable segue to this game, so I'm not going to even try. I've been playing Star Overdrive, kind of indie title. I grabbed the review because I liked the aesthetic of it. It looks like my sort of thing. It's got a kind of 80s metal, hair metal sort of vibe going on. And it turns out it's not a bad game either. It's essentially Zelda. So think a modern Zelda game with a hoverboard and a keytar as your weapon.
Switch exclusive for a little bit? Is it?
No,
am I thinking about the same thing?
I'm playing on PC, but yeah.
Was it briefly? Am I thinking about the same thing?
No, it wasn't a Switch. It's
maybe console exclusive? Switch was...
There can be more than one sandboarding game as well. Like,
yeah, there could be.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a hoverboard kind of dealio. The story is you've been searching for your missing love interest for about 7 years. You finally get she went off on an expedition for a mining company. You finally get a signal from her. You find she's on this planet somewhere, and you just get on that planet, and her hoverboard turns up to help you find her. And cool. Basically,
I love how stupid that is.
It is. It's fucking ridiculous. And your weapon is a keytar. Shit you not. It's a keytar. So
nope.
That's
they know exactly what they're doing. I'm on board.
Yep. It's great. navigating around this kind of desert planet is fucking awesome, because you've got a hoverboard and you can do tricks and you can zoom, and it encourages you to do tricks, because as you do tricks, you get turbo boosts and things, so you can move across the ground quicker. Combat's fun if, you know, a little basic, kind of like Zelda. But you do get these really cool powers. There are dungeons just like Zelda, and the dungeons usually involve getting you a new power or something like that. And they use really inventive ways of using the power. There's one, for example, that's a bounce pad power, and you can drop a bounce pad. And it's physics based. So the higher you are, drop the bounce pad, the further higher the height you will bounce up again. And so there's a lot of kind of platforming puzzles built around that idea that, you know, you're kind of going up, for example, a kind of just a cliff face with these little ledges, and how you get up to the next ledge is by dropping a bounce pad and falling all the way down again, hitting the bounce pad and going all the way back up again. It's kind of cool stuff like that, and you can do it a couple of times in a row and kind of ramp things up, and it gets really interesting using those powers. The only real issue I've got with it is because the hoverboard is so cool. There's some areas of the map, especially a bit later in the game, where you're kind of going through these tight gorges and things like that, and it just gets frustrating because you're on a hoverboard and you want to be and you kind of run into the walls a lot, and it's not the most precise thing to drive.
It's a hoverboard.
But it's a hoverboard. It's supposed to be like slidey and flippy and you know, all that sort of stuff. So it that feels a bit shit and annoying at times. But otherwise, you can upgrade the hoverboard. That's kind of where most of your kind of upgrades go. You find you know, different materials around the world, and you can use that to upgrade your different parts on your hoverboard to improve its different stats. Like, it's got 6 stats or so, and each upgrade will affect certain stats, you know, your boost and your speed and your handling and all those sort of normal things you'd imagine. And yeah, it's not obviously as grand a scale as say Zelda's Breath of the Wild or something like that. There's it's nowhere near as deep as that.
Yeah, but I think
absolutely see that it was an inspiration to their design. Adding the hoverboard in, super cool, fun combat, like. Yeah, look, if you're looking for a Zelda-like on any console, I think they did offer any console code for review.
Also, I've been checking. I think I was right. There's a launch trailer for Switch dated a couple of months ago now.
Interesting. So, there you go.
Very, very short exclusivity window. Yeah, technically. Yeah.
But so it comes out this week on everything else then. Yeah, I'll have my review up. I really enjoy it. It's the sort of game that you just go, yeah, there's a small team has made this, and you can see that, but they've made a lot of heart with it. It's not going to surprise anyone, but it just offers a lot of fun adventure sort of Zelda experience, which I mean, there's not a lot to complain about, really.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you know what you're getting in for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I strongly recommend people check it out if that's your sort of thing. Yeah, we might have a break, go and get a cup of tea, soothe the vocal cords, and then we'll come back and get hyped about trailers and stuff. Right, everyone, we're back. Our vocal cords have been refreshed and we're ready to go all hype crazy about all the trailers that we saw over the festivities that were on offer for all gamers everywhere. We're just going to start with the big conferences and work our way through what tickled our fancy. We're not going to go through everything because, frankly, we don't have enough time. But
we could, but we really don't want to.
That's a long-ass podcast and yeah. Yeah, we don't want to do that.
You'll be asleep by now. Yeah,
absolutely. So we're going
to
kick
off. Go to sleep to podcast. What are you?
So we're going to kick off with PlayStation. So PlayStation kind of came in at last minute. We didn't. They hadn't announced anything.
They may have announced that state of play while we were recording.
I think they might have done that last time, and because they had nothing confirmed, and then they went, "Hey, we're doing something," and it turned out to be pretty good. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't a lot from PlayStation themselves, but. There was some cool shit on show. Tim, I know you quite enjoyed that show.
A couple of specific comments. Yeah. One, I think it was very brave of them to open with the game that is going to be the quintessential cannot wait for the Switch 2 version of this.
Yeah, Luminous.
Looks fantastic, but doesn't my it? God. Yeah, like, yeah. Sony, you are aware that everybody who is Luminous pilled remembers it playing it on the PSP.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. This is the one to take on the road with good headphones. Yeah, but the other thing was I did, like, I was maybe 10, 15 minutes into watching this, like, after I got out of bed and, like, just started. It was probably almost over when I started. And I was, like, messaging Hughes, going, boy, like, Sony's finally decided, like, we've given up on them and we've said so on the podcast and now they've decided, like, this show seems okay so far.
It's probably the best day to play this generation.
Yeah,
like,
I think
so. It's still not the best thing they've ever done, but my God, imagine if like this was a couple of years ago. Like, our entire attitude towards current gen would probably be a bit sunnier.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There was some cool stuff on show for sure. I mean, Lumines was an exciting one for me because I remember playing Lumines on the I think it was the PSP.
Oh, dude.
And then Tetris Effect consumed me for a long time. So, yeah, I'm keen. I'm very
keen. Lumines made me get stuck in the middle of nowhere in London at like 1 a.m. because I just played it through my stop and did not realize until a bus ran to the end of its route.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was never a train game for me in the PSP days, probably for that reason. I was really, and I'm sure you both will agree, like 007 First Light looked amazing.
Yeah.
I want to say unexpectedly so. I guess I should have more faith in IO, but like,
When it was said IO were doing a Bond game, I was like, all right, I haven't played Hitman for a very long time.
I played a lot of the world of Hitman or whatever they call it nowadays, the most recent stuff. And it felt like a perfect match to me of developers, to be honest.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So I thought, and watching that trailer, I love the vibe. Like, it gives me the vibe of like classic era Bond movies too.
It feels like Pierce Brosnan Bond, not Daniel Craig Bond, which I'm okay with. Like, for a video game, I think that works better.
I absolutely agree. Like that. Like, I just love the bit in the trailer where, like, he's in the room in the Q Branch office and he's like, actually grabs a thing, the flamethrower from the back of the bike.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, they've got the assignment and they've nailed it.
Yeah.
So I've really got that on the list of like, yes, I would like to play that.
Because I remember like people were like speculating a lot about like what tone are they going to take with this? And there was a lot of people saying it has to be like back to like this goofy 60s kind of thing. And they do seem to have like made this compromise where it is
modern,
serious with a smirk.
Yeah.
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 I'm
said, bored with Pierce Brosnan more than Sean Connery sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I know you mean that well, but like only one of those Pierce Brosnan movies was actually any good.
I think two.
I was going to say two of them. Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies was good. And Gold Knight, like, you have Rupert Murdoch-esque villain in that. Yeah. Price played that guy so well.
Yes. And what's her face? Was it Michelle Yeoh?
Yeah,
she was the Bond girl. Yeah, that was a good one. But anyway, our Pierce Brosnan love aside, I like it. I like the look of that. I'm excited. And it looks like it's just it'll all depend on how all those separate parts come together, though, I think.
And
that's the key. You know?
You're absolutely right on that. Like they've got the aesthetic now, but there's all the other things. And there's like kind of systems that, you know, don't think of being done in a Hitman, like driving.
Driving
is the one I think they've got to nail, because they're always, those kind of things are always part of a Bond film.
Then there's going to be a whole licensing issue of like, is it going to have to be an Aston Martin or a Porsche or fucking,
I think they went like, with Aston. Is that? Because Aston has a current deal with Bond, the whole IP.
I think part of the reason I'm aware of what Aston Martin even is probably Casino Royale. Like,
honestly. Yeah. Yes, yes. Well, if I was going to have a supercar and, you know, money was not an object, it'd be an Aston Martin. And that's probably because I've watched a lot of Bond.
And it's probably because I think I will look great driving that in a tuxedo with, like, my Omega watch and my fucking whatever.
Absolutely.
There's gonna be plenty of product placement there, like not only just from the Omega watch bit you see in the trailer.
It's a weird one where like I'm gonna be upset if he doesn't have a watch that is very clearly marked with some luxury brand that shows lasers.
It's in
like,
the trailer. It's Omega in the trailer.
There's the box and you see the logo stamped on it. Yeah.
So it's absolutely Omega. You expect that. It has become a part of Bond. So if you don't have it, you're missing out, I think.
One thing I loved as well was I saw a comment from someone that like the character design of Bond attributed like some facial scar that was in like a sketch that Ian Fleming did.
Yeah.
So it's like they've really sort of drilled into the source, that kind of source material of like the literary side.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see if more of that comes through, because I know Bond in the books is quite a different character than than Bond in the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I've also, a couple of years ago, actually read one or two of the original stories, and they're pretty fun, but also, like, every five pages, wildly sexist.
Oh, yeah. They were a product of their time.
Yes, that is the way to put it.
All right, we'll move on from Bond. I saw one that I thought would interest you, Rob, and that's the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection, because it looks like they're doing the kind of Atari 50 thing.
Yeah, but with Mortal Kombat. It's more, yeah, I think that's going to be really cool. Like, again, Digital Eclipse are on board, seeing all the DE guys go nuts for it. I think it's a good thing for that. You know, they worked on the Street Fighter one that was a few years ago as well.
The anniversary collection.
Street Fighter. And of course, you know, Atari 50 and the Gold Master stuff, the Turtles Cowabunga collection as well. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see where that's going to go. If it's going to be more like the Turtles one or more like Atari 50 and whatnot. Yeah. I'm not hardcore into Mortal Kombat, so I'll be interested to probably check it out.
I want an Atari 50 thing. I never played Mortal Kombat much, but I bet there are some fucking stories.
Yeah, no, yeah. It looked from the trailer, it gave me that impression that there were going to be docos and things like that.
Yeah.
In interviews, that they had Ed Boon and Tobias, I forget his last name.
I want to say Harris, but my mind is basketball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had them definitely in the trailer. It looked like there was behind the scenes stuff of the filming of the original game and things like that. So I really hope they do, because I reckon it'd be fascinating. I am a Mortal Kombat guy. I was the guy at the 20 cent, you know, at the fish and chip shop and Mortal Kombat, right? So
you actually had a 20 cent machine. It was always a dollar.
No, we had 20 cent. We had a whole pinball parlor of 20 cent. It was the best.
I grew up in the Blue Mountains, like at the roller skating rink in fucking
Penrith.
And
I'm older than you too.
Only a couple of years. I still feel like
the inflation was a lot.
Mass inflation, dude.
Yeah, I remember Street Fighter, like the Street Fighter 2, original Street Fighter 2, at a fish and chip shop a few doors down from where my dad worked, and that was, I swear, that was a buck.
Yeah, no,
I don't remember much cheaper than a dollar unless it was like a really old thing.
It used to be 60 cents, then it went to a dollar, and then $2. That's what I remember from arcade games.
Yeah, like, no, we had a whole arcade full of 20 cent games, and the only ones that were more than that were the cars or the guns.
The sit down cabinets. Yeah. All right, we've gotten ourselves distracted. Yeah,
distracted like that. And we're going to move straight into the arcade fight stick. Hey.
Yeah, that did look good.
Oh, nice segue, dude. Oh.
That actually looks really cool. I'm glad
to
see them.
I hope it works as well as it looks.
Price point, like the finding the price point and the quality of a fight stick, it seems to be something that no one can do, right? They're either super expensive and really good because they're super expensive, or cheap as shit and crap. So there needs to be that kind of that middle point, I think, because I think I'm the sort of person that I'd like a fight stick, but I'm not keen enough to spend a zillion on it. But I also don't want a crappy shit one either. So,
I mean, the main
it's going to be expensive, dude. It's like literally everything is expensive.
I think it needs to be less than those, like legit fighting sticks that they pay, you know, $400 or $500 for. So
it cannot be the price of a console, is what you're saying.
No, I agree. Like the most expensive I paid for a stick is the 8-bit Doe one, and that was like $170.
Yeah,
and I use that. You know, it's nice on the Switch and stuff.
That's already expensive for
a controller. That is pretty high for a stick. Yep. But the thing that's great with that is it's got all of the wireless stuff, and you can get in there and swap all the switches and lever out if you need to do that, which I haven't. But it's nice and hefty. It sits nice on the lap if I'm on the couch on the Switch.
Yeah.
And to have something like that at a reasonable price for the PS5 would be good, because I play a lot of like PS4, PS5 games that have shooters and stuff, so I'd be on board with that.
It'd be fun. Yeah, and as they add more of the older games and stuff to their like PlayStation collections and things like that, it'd be fun.
Well, a Marvel fighting collection in itself is probably going to be enough for most people to justify that thing. But yeah, I guess actually when you consider the closing game, which I think looks cool but is not for me, actually my entire takeaway of like why I think this state of play is good, particularly good, is not everything in this state of play was for me, but it felt like everything was for somebody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that fucking matters. Like I just didn't feel like there was this kind of dribble of like scraped off the boardroom floor. This is the ideas that we forced you to like shove into some online service game. Like it really felt like there is an audience. There are people who would be excited for each one of these.
Yeah, there really was. even the
and
weird
finishing
shit.
On that fucking fighting game.
Yeah,
like somebody who's not Capcom have a crack at Marvel. I don't know if I will be able to play it because I suck at these things. The character designs look fucking rad, though.
The worry I have with Arc System Works doing it is they have a penchant for doing some weird ass fighting system shit. Like the Guilty Gear and the they a lot of them were on Guilty Gear and then they moved and did the BlazBlue ones, and they're super weird to play. Like they're not, it's not like the thing with Marvel vs. Capcom was always, if you'd ever even remotely stood near a fighting game, you had a pretty good shot of enjoying the game, right? Like it was very open and easy to get a handle of. I worry that these guys, they're very technical developers, if they're going to go down that road, and that will be a barrier for them, I think. Mm. They have done easier games. They did the Dragon Ball one-on-one fighting game from a couple of years ago that was pretty solid.
Pretty well received, I think.
Yeah. I reviewed it on the Switch, I think, and it was a solid fighting game. You know, it did really well, which surprised me because most of those games are trash. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. It looks fun though. I'm excited. I love fighters, so yeah.
Yeah, they're announcing what is effectively Journey 2 coming out on my birthday when I cannot play it.
I did see that. I saw that and thought of you, actually. Except you're on a sword instead of floaty dresses.
It won't be as good as Journey. It still looks cool, though.
I would love
to play it. I'm annoyed that it's actually coming out on my birthday and I'm not going to be able to access my PlayStation for like a couple of weeks after.
Yeah, the Bloodstained sequel looked pretty good.
Yeah, I've kind of never really clicked with the
Castle Stania, as I think I've started to recall.
Yeah, I mean, I spent more time with the ones that were more like classic
the 8-bit
Castlevania
ones,
than
yeah.
Yeah, rather than the main one. Yeah. But what I played, I should get back to it, but I remember liking it a bit, just getting stuck early on. Yeah. So maybe get myself unwedged from that. That's sort of like one to check out.
Yeah.
One
I watch. And the same goes with Hiragami. That looked really cool too, the kind of origami platformer that they had on show.
Mm.
Kind of looks like that Takeaway or, you know, Paper Mario vibe. Tearaway, that's the one.
Tearaway.
That looks like it could be very cool, but all right.
I think the thing I most want to play is actually Romeo is a Dead Man.
Oh, that looks so weird. But I was watching it going, this is weird as shit. It's got to be a Suda game. And then,
I just wanted to know if, like, it was Suda, like, watching, like, 20 years too late, like, Romeo Must Die and going, this movie needs a fucking sequel and I'm going to make it.
Yeah. Does just need a sequel. It needs a sequel for Dose of Weirdness.
Yep, with the Suda style.
The thing was, it was so weird. I didn't even immediately call it out as Suda. It was just kind of like, what is this? And it just made sense at the end at some point.
It was either Devolver Digital or Suda. There's no way. Yeah. Well, we might move on. We're going to hit up Keely now. It was a long show. His shows are always too long. And there's so much advertising shit.
Sneakers are always very, very silly.
Yeah. Oh, good luck to the man. He's got a sneaker deal. But, you know, most basketballers live for that. But, yeah, I think it's just that's always the biggest problem I have with these Keely shows. And I understand that it costs money to get them. And so he has advertising slots for all those terrible gacha games that are just fucking gross. But, you know, at the same time, there's some games that we've seen 100 times we don't need to see again. Like Mouse PI, if you don't know that it's for you or not by now, you've been living under a rock because that doesn't need any more kind of sprucing, especially a small one just to say Troy Baker's in it, you know, things like that.
It's like we got them, like it's the Nolan North of the current decade. Yeah. It's a new video game again. Like,
I mean, stuff like that kind of annoyed me. But there were some games, but also
the most time-wasting Death Stranding 2 thing. I get that Kojima and Keely are buddies, but like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, it was.
That game's out in a couple of weeks.
It doesn't need to be in a couple of weeks anyway. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be in a showcase like this.
Yeah.
I understand it being there, but like, you have to show something worthwhile to do it. Like,
not
that
just
was
two
just
people
like,
talking in an office.
Yeah.
Like it means something to anyone that hasn't played the game.
Yeah.
But I am excited for Sonic Cross Worlds. And I'm actually going to play it this week at the Sega offices in Sydney. So that nice. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, so. Fresh off owning a Switch 2 as well. Like, I assume you've got a decent amount of Mario Kart under your belt as well.
Yeah, skills have been finely tuned, ready to go by getting beaten by my 16-year-old in every knockout tour as he hammers me with a fucking red shell just before we finish, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm ready for the rage, but it looks fun. I mean, I'm down for that sort of shit. Who isn't? Like,
no, Sonic Sega All-Star Racing Transformed, aside from being a stupidly long name, was actually a really fun game.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed
it. The last one was kind of very kind of mediocre, middle of the road. It was still fine. Like, it wasn't actually bad. But, like, there have been some good ones of these. I feel like this timing is very unfortunate coming in off the heels of the first Mario Kart in a decade.
Yeah, that hurts. Yep. But it also it gives people that don't have a Switch a game to play because it's on everything.
It's going to be on everything.
Yeah. And it's got Ichiban in it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't think of you until I was like, yep.
Yep. I know who
speaking of Ichiban, also, I guess we all got Kotaku. That was the Keighley show, right, where they like showed a bit more of Project Sentry or whatever its new name is.
Yeah, the Stranger Than Heaven.
Yeah, that game's looking really cool.
Oh yeah, that looks.
That game
great.
Is looking very cool. I will give I think they're gonna have like settings like multiple decades over the course of 100 years. I don't know for sure. Like it is weird and obtuse in a good way. It's what I wanted from a Kojima trailer. Like a what the fuck?
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a guess. I don't know what's going on. Looks rad.
Yeah, I really liked that trailer, and I actually was talking to the main PR guy that handles Sega this week. And he asked me, you know, what did you think of the show? And I said, yeah, well, that Stranger Than Heaven looks unreal. And I said, I've already got about four of my writers going, I want to review that. So I said, I might be nagging you a bit.
One of the ones out of left field for me was that felt that boxing.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Punch Out with Muppets.
Yes. Yeah. And I worry
that... more of a Ready to Rumble vibe, actually. A lot of people are saying Punch Out, but...
It kind of looked like it with the lean-back dodges, you know, that they were doing. Sorry. And that's what I thought, too, was Punch Out. But if there's a bit more... Because Punch Out's fun, but I don't know that's enough to carry a whole game these days.
I think that's a very fair concern. Yeah. Like, for me, it was just like... It was just the style. Mm-hmm. Like, it just like... Muppets are cool.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if I'm going to play the game, but I do respect how fucking hard they have gone.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat. I'm terrible with that sort of rhythm stuff that Punch-Out needs to really be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just appreciated the physicality is sort of like of the artistry there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of why that piped my thing.
There was actually a lot of really cool kind of different art styles on display in the whole show, I think. Like, there was lots of stuff that wasn't just, you know, bros with guns or it felt unique, and they actually did a good job.
And then we had a guy with a make first-person shooter great again baseball cap.
That guy. Ugh. And for such a middling game, too, from what I hear.
Yeah, which is upset, because I really liked the first one. It was the first multiplayer game I'd played in Yonks and actually enjoyed, because it felt like an old-school one and it added a nice twist to it. So I played that for quite a bit. But apparently, yeah, this new one's a bit... The main stuff from that was in the first game is still good, but everything they've added to it's a bit meh, which is disappointing.
It's always a shame.
Oh, shit, I just remembered there was also a launch trailer for Mind's Eye.
Yeah.
That game looked pretty, like, generic but good in trailers. Like, it looked like a fun, dumb, generic
game. I remember seeing it, I think, at, like, the last State of Play earlier in the year, and I thought... That looks all right. I want to see how that turns out.
It gave me...
It doesn't and like, it turned out to be... What?
Oh, my God. Like, what?
It gave me Aldi Watchdog vibes. And
we have watchdogs
actually
at home.
Not Aldi Watchdogs. It's, you know, $2 store watchdogs. Timu Watchdogs.
Timu Watchdogs.
Oh, yeah. Now that a couple of reviews have started to drop. Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh. Like...
I feel for them, but, man.
Yeah.
Like... Something must have, like, there has to be, you know, tales of, like,
I think they lost a financer, is my guess. Like, yeah. I feel it, by
and just
accounts,
had to get it
it's,
out
like,
the door.
Released in a cyberpunk-type state, except without that level of hype behind it, so it'll probably never get fixed to the point that it needs to.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, it's probably sunk the whole company to start with.
Yeah, especially the climate we're in, mm-hmm. industry-wise. Yeah.
Yeah, which is my other, like, slight, with this whole show is, like, Keighley went a little... Like, indie games are cool, great. I also, like, love that the State of Play was made awesome despite a relative lack of AAA blockbusters.
Yeah.
But they were really going hard in. Look at how few people can make games these days. Yeah. Like, they're trying to, like, gloss and, like, happy over, like, all the layoffs of the last few years.
Yeah. Like, there's all the stuff around Expedition 33 where it's like,
30 people? I was like, no, there are a lot of contractors they work with.
Everybody's been a little bit guilty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's been really good about it. Everybody has also said, of course, like, clearly they've subcontracted out, but like, he just kept saying, he didn't even say 30-something. He just said 30 people without any asterisk next to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a dangerous thing because then it makes, like, small indies who are doing stuff a lot more pressure on them. And it's already hard enough for them to get financing or to whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we're going off target a bit, I think. So I'll save that rant for
another time. It is actually a reaction. It is a reaction
to what we saw. And it's a fair one, to be honest. Yeah, it's hard to reconcile that, isn't it?
We got a cool-looking Game of Thrones trailer that shows us nothing about what the game will be like.
Except
like, they just spent a shit ton of money making a cool CG video.
And it's Australian.
That is just, which is nice. Right. But this trailer is completely useless to me.
I suspect it'll be a real-time strategy game because that's the
I think they've actually said as much. But no, like
the mob that made Age of Darkness. So, So I suspect it'll be a real... Which, I mean, I immediately thought of the very cool... Lord of the Rings one that came out like on the Xbox 360 era. Yeah, that was a very good one. It kind of just used Age of Empires as a base print and then built from there, and so hopefully, like, because they're talking about, you know, playing as the bad guys and playing as the, you know, all the different factions, so hopefully it is. I mean, I'm always down for real-time strategy games.
I'm just less and less down for like just CG concept trailers.
Yeah.
It's a shame that, like, I would rather have not had, I would rather have seen some gameplay or something like that. It's sort of like, we're sort of over the era of what bullshot.
It's also just, like, probably a lot of money into something that's, just, that was it.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone now.
Yeah.
Yep.
You could have said we're making a Game of Thrones strategy game, and that probably would have been just as effective.
Yeah.
Like a cool-looking logo and some concept art or something.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Like voiceover, a bit of narrative.
There was a suspiciously large amount of beat 'em ups on display too. Three by my count.
Got a reason for wanting to make that fight stick.
Yeah. So Scott Pilgrim's getting a new beat 'em up, which looks like a Scott Pilgrim game would expect.
Yeah, it is supposed to be a sequel to that original one.
Didn't tell me that was not the PS3 360 game, I probably would have thought it was just
just that one coming out again.
But that got remastered pretty in the last couple of years anyway. So I guess that must have like been used to.
It must have done okay as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And the one that I really liked the look of was Axe of Blood, because it basically feels like The Raid, the game. If you've ever seen The Raid, it is, I say this without a word of lie, The Raid and The Raid 2 are the best action movies of the last 20 years. They're Indonesian and they have Akil Wallace, who's been in a few Hollywood movies, and Joe Towson, who was Sub-Zero in the most recent Mortal Kombat. And they're fantastic. They're so good. And this looks exactly like it. So I'm super excited for it. But yeah, go and see The Raid and The Raid 2. They're unreal.
Are they on Netflix? Are they on Disney Plus? Like, I need a place to watch.
They were on Amazon. I don't know if they still are. I mean, I've got Blu-ray copies of it, but yeah. They are fantastic.
Unless you feel like mailing those Blu-rays to me, this does not help very much.
I could give you access to my Plex server.
he whispers on a podcast that's going to be accessible to the whole world.
Yeah.
Now, try and be positive about something. Like, Atomic Heart 2 looks really cool.
The writing in the first one was so bad.
By all accounts, I was kind of excited about the first one, and then, like, it just wasn't.
I tried to play it. And, like, I got where they were going for, but the writing was terrible. And I don't know if it was just because they're Russian and, you know, writing, it just didn't work in translation or something, but it just was, it was terrible. It was really bad.
Let's say that. It's not like the writing in, like, the Metro games is really, really bad.
No,
they have moments where it's like, that seems a little bit off, but, like, by and large.
Yeah, they nail it. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't
know. Like Voyages. I want to play that. I want to, like, force my wife to sit down with me and play a chip a little bounce Lego brick around the world.
That did look fun. Like Split Fiction, like a Lego version of a Joseph Farah's game. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, the trailer of this show was Mafia, but yeah, that's no shock to anyone. I'm really excited for Mafia, especially as it's linear and it's not doing open world at all.
Oh, man, that's still really loved Mafia 2 for that.
Yep.
Love that the city was just there for you to chill in if you wanted to, but it did not distract you when you didn't need it.
Yep. Yeah.
That's like always a good thing.
All right, then. I think we've probably run over everything in the Keighley show that excited us. I mean, Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, actually, I do respect Capcom for, like, doing an anti-Donald Trump with, like, the usage of the word soon. Because they did not lie.
They didn't lie at all. They said
more for you soon, and soon turned to be, like, 30, 40 minutes later.
Yeah, yeah. And it looked like it was a mix of, like, Resident Evil 4 style and Resident Evil kind of 7-8 style. So that's what it came across to me as anyway, so... apparently you can play in both third and first person. So just for everyone that's been a fan of Resident Evil, you get both styles.
Didn't they like patch the first person ones?
I can't remember. Maybe.
I want to say you can play in third now.
Okay, cool. I never played 8. I played 7. I didn't play 8.
8's pretty good.
Yeah.
Should this be made by Capcom recently? On average, they are
on a roll. I will give them that. They are rolling right now. All right, let's move on to the big green show. Immediately, I guess we should probably talk about the hardware thing. What was more exciting for me is the new version of Windows. More than anything, that basically bumps all the shit away, so you can just play games, which is fantastic.
I was mostly just excited because we got something right in our predictions, like we 100%, like down to the company, like called that, like there's going to be a rogue ally with Xbox laptop.
That doesn't surprise me. Just like it makes sense for them to partner with.
It was a very easy thing to guess. Like the reason we got it right is because like the writing has been on the wall for this to happen for over a year. Yeah. Now.
And Phil's been quite open in saying they're working on a new version of Windows to make gaming better. So apparently it's going to launch on the Ally, that version of Windows, and then become available to other systems in 2026. So, which is good because I've got an Ally which is pretty much the same specs as that one. And I would like the better Windows, please, because Windows is shit on a handheld.
I want that to be able to on like a desktop build.
I've got a computer hooked up the TV, so it'd be fantastic on that, you know. So
I'm increasingly starting to believe that when they say they're going to release a new Xbox, the new Xbox will be a console, but it'll be a very specific spec PC hardware running this version of Windows, and the Xbox game will be purchasable on Steam. Just like, you know, Steam Deck, a lot of games now have Steam Deck just settings baked in. There'll be Xbox settings baked in.
I think so. And I think the next Xbox hardware console bit under the telly will actually have Steam available on it. You'll be able to play certain Steam games. I don't think it'll work with everything, obviously, because there'll be some compatibility issues there, but it'll be like the Steam Deck verified list. They'll have
I think we're saying more or less the same thing.
Not just the like the control schemes and everything, but the whole works. But yeah, it'll be interesting.
Wouldn't surprise me, quite frankly.
Games. There were actually some very good games on the Xbox One. The studios are starting to cook.
I'm going to get ahead of games, and I just mentioned the BDS boycott again because Israel is continuing to act very, very badly, and you would even say illegally if you want the United States, perhaps. Yeah.
So I did include that in the article that I put up on the website, the link to the boycott, if you want more information. The last I heard that Microsoft had actually started negotiating out of contracts where possible. So it might be working.
I would like them to do that for two reasons. One, please stop supplying weapons to a psychotic, basically dictator, ironically Jewish Hitler.
Yeah.
And two, I would like to be able to, in good conscience, buy the new Double Fine game.
Yeah. So I think that's why they are in the process. I think the pressure has come to them finally. To be fair, they weren't selling weapons. They were selling software. And they sell it to literally everyone except for Russia. So they're moving Israel into that Russia territory. So, you know, maybe the voice has helped or maybe they've got a tap from somewhere else. But either way.
It hasn't hurt, surely.
It hasn't hurt, yeah. So just keep that in mind when we talk about Xbox. Games, though, the big surprise for me was a Plague Tale prequel.
The biggest surprise for me was apparently like the apparently there are dyed in the wool Plague Tale fans like were able to pick that it was a Plague Tale game. almost immediately.
That's impressive. I didn't pick it was a Plague Tale game at all until the end.
I didn't see a single rat as far. I mean, no. I wasn't watching that closely. I had it on in the background while I was making breakfast or whatever.
Yeah. It's a good series. It's super good series.
Those games are both pretty good. Yeah. I'm pretty grim. Like, if you want a happy ending, this is not the series for you, but...
Yeah. No, I really enjoy it.
Also, if you want a happy ending, Tears of the Kingdom is for you if you like reading into it a little bit.
But yeah, so I was excited about that. Ninja Gaiden 4.
No Wonder Quantity still looks very good. Keeper looks rad, though.
Keeper looks like a game that only Double Fine could make.
100%. Like, they just have my goodwill. The thing is, like, it also feels like a little bit like maybe they're returning to, like, 2010 to 2012 era Double Fine, where, like, they were, like, had lots of studios making cool little experimental
little cool
fun
little
projects.
Things, yeah.
I actually want more than, like, a new Psychonauts or a new Riddle Legend. I really want to see that happen again. Like,
so do I.
Yeah.
I want another stacking, man. It doesn't have to be called stacking, but I want, like, that kind of shit to, like, suck.
I like their tower defense game. What was that? Iron Brigade. That was good.
Yeah. That was a neat one.
But yeah, so that was exciting seeing Double Fine. And it's coming out
at
this year. Like, they're not mucking around. It's coming out in October or something.
They should have closed with it, because my gosh, what a bait and switch
with the Call of Duty. Yeah, I mean, like,
watch, and it's like,
I'm a Call of Duty apologist, right? I quite enjoy, especially the Black Ops stories. I like that bonkers. It's sort of like a grand old watching a Michael Bay movie. You know, you sit back, you turn your brain into neutral, you shoot a bunch of people. There's cool conspiracies going on. You know, I can get down with that, but it's not an end of game. Like, Microsoft have got Fable.
It would have been a perfect opener. Like, it would have been a great thing to just open the show with, like, right away before, like, having the host. But, like, it would have been like if EA had a show and they said, and one more thing, we're making a soccer game. I bet you didn't believe that.
It's FIFA or football club.
Because, like, the start of the
it.
Trailer did look kind of mysterious. I'm like, I'm getting, like, slightly Binary Domain vibes out of this. Like, come on, please be something. Oh, wait.
It's Call of Duty.
I'm sure it's going to be fun for those people, but that is not an exciting thing.
It's not an end of show game. It really isn't. Yeah. Sadly. My game of the show, though, was Clockwork Revolution. And we got a lot of that.
That's the In Exile one.
Yeah. That looks fantastic. It absolutely, like, it was designed for me.
That's good to, like, see them letting, like, seeing
seeing Exile with money, Jessica. Like, because they've kind of scraped through every other game they've ever made, and this one, you can see that they've gone, all right, we got the check, boys, let's go.
Like, same with Obsidian, you know, seeing Obsidian's in the same thing, like Outer Worlds
Holy
2.
Three games Obsidian has in turned a year. Into Insomniac.
Yeah,
because, like, Avowed, and then,
And then Grounded 2, and,
Grounded.
And,
I'm going to guess a lot of the groundwork for Grounded 2 is probably already done, but it's still fucking impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Outer Worlds 2 looks wild. Like, did you see the perk, the knee perk, Tim? I thought of you when I saw this. So there's a perk.
I wasn't paying super close attention in the
So this perk system where there are flaws and perks in your character build, and one of them is dodgy knees. So...
Wait, it's a flaw or a perk?
It's a flaw. But each of the flaws give you a bonus, and they also give you a disadvantage. So the dodgy knee actually allows you to move faster crouched, but if you stand up, your knees pop and make a noise.
Dude, no.
So everyone can hear you. So that's freaking awesome.
My knees click all the time. Yeah. I get enough of that in real life.
I thought that was such a cool thing. So the floor system and what they're doing with the Outer Worlds 2 is they're making it like you make a choice, it's yours. There's no respecking that, and they've come out and said that you're not respecking anything. You've got to live with your choices. So it sounds super fun. And also, I think that sort of approach gives you more incentive to play it again. Like if you can go and shuffle things around and you know. Fiddle with things, you probably have a good time, but there's no real desire to go back again and build a new character.
There's
but,
no attachment.
So
I actually feel like most games should actually just have an option at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to be out of respect or like have a similar idea of it like with like Souls games where it's like, let people lock themselves in and just take that temptation away.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. And that's what they're doing here. So, yeah, I mean, they've been pretty open in saying the Outer Worlds 1 was kind of proof of concept, and this is really taking it to the next level. So, hey, I'm okay with that. I loved the Outer Worlds ones. It felt yeah. like the best version of a game I'd played before.
Yeah,
and so to go further, I'm keen with that.
Because, like, I struggled with clicking with, like, the Bethesda style. Yeah. So, I bounced off Fallout 3, I bounced off those. But Outer Worlds got me hooked. So I was like,
that obsidian magic dust, the writing. It's the writing. They're just the best in the business.
I think that's what got me with that. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to being able to comfortably pick the sequel up at some point. When it's viable.
Yeah, I think my surprise highlight was probably actually Beast of Reincarnation.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool.
Which it looks like they are plagiarizing half of the Studio Ghibli library. Like, I really thought, like, get a Princess Mononoke license or something at the beginning, and, like, all the robots look super Miyazaki in design as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell you what, except without, you know, the Ghibli filter, like, it still has its own style, but the designs, you can see very clear inspiration if you're familiar with that filmography. But yeah, the Pokemon guys are making a cool looking, I'm not a big Souls-like guy, but I would give this one a shot.
Yeah. That sounds, it's odd, isn't it, that Pokemon.
And it's clearly Game Freak, because even in the trailer, like, there are bits where the frame rate were a bit choppy, like, you did not need Digital Foundry tools to see it, like, it's like, that camera pan was not as smooth as,
yeah.
That definitely feels like an interesting combo.
It is. It's kind of the thing that gets you through the door just on the concept, right? You know?
Yeah.
It looks cool, though. Like, it actually does look rad.
It does. I liked the design of the enemies and stuff, especially.
Watch Princess Mononoke. Like, yeah. I'm guessing you've never seen a Ghibli movie. That's on Netflix in Australia, isn't it?
I have no idea. Could be.
I think
it's everywhere but Japan and America. You should at least watch Mononoke.
Yeah. Like, okay. Actually, Jake might have seen it, because he's got a friend that's mad into that stuff, so he's watched a fair few of them. It's stuff that I haven't watched, so I'll ask him if he knows where I can find it. Mudang, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, Two Hearts. It looked like the Splinter Cell game we're never going to get, which, you know.
Yeah, I've heard a few people saying that.
Yeah. Apparently, you play it from three different perspectives. It's Korean. Kind of near
future. Cool. I'm totally happy. Yeah.
Near more future. Apparently, unification happens in this story in Korea. And on the day of unification.
How the fuck did they manage that?
There's a terrorist attack.
All right, that checks out.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's kind of where the story's set. And that sounds like a cool, you know, at least it's somewhere different, right? You know, it's not just.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Splinter Cell. Don't get me wrong. I've been playing in Blacklist again recently, but it's nice to play something like that in a new location.
That sounds really neat. And a three perspective thing. That's because it's always interesting when you have a game to have the story play out from those angles.
So apparently,
and watch
you
it all
play
sort of-
a spy guy, the terrorist that apparently did it, and some just random like normal Joe. So.
That's definitely, like, that third perspective is the one that's, like, really unique. Yeah. I'm like, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited to see at least a fair bit more of that.
I agree. That's certainly piqued my interest.
Mm. What else was there that was really exciting? I mean, everything else was – I mean, I'm not an Invincible fan, so
– Actually, we previously neglected to mention Killer Inn, which is a great name for a game.
Mm.
It's like – got similar vibes from There Are No Ghosts at the Grand. I feel like both of these games are going to give people like one of the greatest nights of gaming in their lives, and then they're never going to be able to get it to click again.
Yeah, I think so. The No Ghosts in the Grand, it gave me kind of, you know, almost the South of Midnight kind of style vibes. With the music being really key and that sort of thing. Which I loved South of Midnight. I thought it was amazing. I guess I'm interested to see that one. It's a Game Pass one too, so I guess the barrier of entry is pretty low. I'm not sure if it'll hold up. That was my only concern. Like, it looks cool. The style looks cool.
I think it's going to, like, provide a couple of amazing weeks, like I said, but, like, the chances of it fading out. Like, I feel like it's going to be a lot of work to keep it interesting over time.
Yeah, yeah. And it could be just a 6-hour game. story game. I don't know. It doesn't really say, I guess. But I don't know that there was much else. I mean, there's stuff that I love.
Final Fantasy is finally happening.
Final Fantasy, yay. A new
Tony Hawk looks really old now. I don't think, I can't remember the last time I saw him, but I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, he's an old fella, man. I'm keen for Tony Hawk.
Check. Oh man.
Yeah, I'm excited for Tony. I always love those games. It's very cool. They've got the young Australian girl that won the gold medal at the Olympics in this game. So that's cool.
I love the fact that they're like modernizing it.
Yeah, they add the new skaters. He also put his foot down and they said they had to include Bam. They didn't want to include Bam for, let's face it, probably pretty obvious reasons. but yeah, that Tony put his foot down and said, no, he was in the original game. He needs a win. Get him in there. Like, if you're so fucked up that they kick you out of Jackass, you know you've got problems. But yeah. Otherwise, I don't think there was much else there. I mean, Gears is fun. It'll be fun again.
Persona 4 Revival, which...
Yeah.
Would have been, I still love the way that game leaked by a whole... I like just a dumb accident or like a genius marketing campaign. I don't know which. Where it's just a whole bunch of voice actors confirming they're not in this game that none of us know about yet.
Yep. They're claiming they're not in it. Oh, Super Meat Boy. That looked fun.
I'm not so sure about the 3D turn.
It'll be interesting.
Look is a bit off.
Yeah. Also, it'll be interesting to
see. There's always a bit of grossness to that game's character design anyway. Yep.
No, I feel like that's missing. Like, it just doesn't quite... Like, there's like one final pass in the art design that needs to like happen yet to like kind of get that squelchiness really down.
Yeah, the grossness right down.
Yeah.
And the Blood of Dawnwalker actually looked like a kind of Vampire Dishonored, which, you know, I don't hate that idea. That looks fun. Apparently you can play as during the day you play as a human and your powers aren't active, and then at night you become the vamp and you can use all your cool shit. So it'd be interesting. Sounds like a cool idea. Whether it's going to be like Forsaken, that's why I worry. It feels like one of those games that like you go, geez, that sounds like a cool idea, and it just kind of fumbles the ball at the end. I worry that might be the case here, but I do like the idea of it. All right then. Have we missed anything over the weekend? Did we see any other trailers or anything like that?
One for me has to be Expanse Osiris Reborn.
Yes, that's some mad Mass Effect vibes going on there.
Yeah. And that's like Alcat, who did like the Warhammer Rogue Trader RPG, which I heard a lot of good things about from friends. So like I'm definitely on board with that, because after, you know, all we heard about Veil Guard's development.
Yeah.
Dug in the collar a bit on Mass Effect 4. Five. Yeah. Whatever the next Mass Effect is, like, I want it to be good, but I'm like, I don't know if BioWare can do it, because the corporate noose of EA over them, the sort of Damocles with a big EA emblazed on it, worries me a fair bit.
Yeah. It is concerning. Though, from reading the Jason Schreier report on Dragon Age, it felt like EA loves the Mass Effect team and doesn't really like the Dragon Age team, and that really did kind of come across. So maybe
I got the Dragon Age is a pirate ship and the Mass Effect team is a Sir Yes Sir team.
Yeah. So that's probably got a bit to do with it.
Yeah.
they kowtow to their masters a little bit more. I agree. Osiris looks cool. Anything else, Tim? Did we miss anything for you?
It's not really my jam, but I kind of like want to like just kind of give a shout out to Final Fantasy Tactics for like coming out and just straight up saying that yes, our game is political. Yeah, they weren't dodging behind any circles. Cool. They came out and said the world is fucked up. That's why this game is relevant.
Yep.
Not hiding it.
Yeah.
Another shout out, I think, has to be just to the whole Frosty Games Fest team.
Yeah.
But just like that, like our showcase of a whole bunch of rad Australian and New Zealand games. Yep. Like Tim was saying with the State of Play, it's like there were games in there that were not for me, but I'm glad they exist and that they're going to find their audience, because there are a lot of good ones in there.
And all reports, it was a massive success for those games in terms of wishlisting and things like that.
The numbers are pretty good.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. It's so cool. Like, that team put that together like a year ago, and they got to being like one of the top tier things running during that week. Like, they just, like, that support, it warms my heart.
It's good to see. It's good to see the local devs get such a global stage, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think Australians in the gaming community in general are pretty good at supporting Australian products. We're you know, Australians in general are good at supporting Australian things. We do that. So that's I don't think ever so much a worry. It's more getting it to that global stage, you
international
know,
thing,
which is
absolutely
awesome.
Absolutely agree. Like, a friend of mine, like, was doing a stream and just took a pause to like talk about, like, flick through like a bunch of trailers from Frosty, and it was just like everyone was just hyped of, like, you know, but international focus, like, oh, some cool stuff there. So. It's
well,
yes,
stuff does break through. Like, remembering, like, everybody's trying to claim Silksong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Microsoft was really trying super hard to peg that thing. In fact, didn't they say it was coming out the same day as the...
But it'll be... No, they said it'll be available when the handheld comes out. So they've given a release window.
They've pegged themselves. They have to get it out after...
Five.
The idea that Silksong gets delayed into next year, and Microsoft's just sitting there going, shit.
Sorry. I don't want it to happen, but part of me would laugh if it does.
They wouldn't. They would just like issue some sort of apology and put it out when, like, it's expected like October, like, or something.
Yeah, because there's the thing in September that's happening at ACBI where it's going to be playable. The exhibit there. I know friends, never parents hyped to see that. I'd probably have to go check it out as well when I can, because that just. That'd be so cool to experience.
I suspect it will be, that around that late September, early October timeframe. Yeah.
Yep. Something big, round packs.
I also have to say, speaking of supporting Australia devs, the first game I played on my Switch 2 was Hand of Fate 2.
Nice. Well, Veiled Defiant.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They've got a new one coming up. That was that in the Frosty Game Show? A new Hand of Fate game, but it's not. It's like a Vampire Survivors. I did a indie piece on it on Player 2.
I think I might have seen that. I think I've seen the piece, but yeah, I don't think.
Don't think it was on the show.
I must have get that a read.
There's a lot of stuff in like a few days. Like,
yeah.
It is all muddled together and it has a bit
it
of
it. Yeah, it definitely feels like that. It's like picking through the bits, like, yep. It's definitely a challenge.
All right, then. I think we've exhausted this as much as we can. We might chuff off. So before we do, Rob, what are you working on, mate?
Right. So I had a review come out for No Way Out, which is a interesting but didn't quite live up to it, twin stick sci-fi adventure. I was a little bummed out that it didn't turn out as well as it did. Some cool ideas, some cool presentation, but just lacking a bit in depth. And like I said earlier on, we'll have a write-up of Tron Catalyst, which should hopefully be out by the time the pod is out. I spent today on the first draft, so I'll edit it and fling it your way hopefully tomorrow and just clean it up and have that done.
Sounds good. Anything on Scanlines?
I did Ridge Racer on PlayStation a few weeks ago, just celebrating when the Arcade Archives 2 release of that dropped. Been doing numbers that have been good for me and planning.
And Ridge Racer. Stage Everyone loves the Ridge Racer.
Yeah, it's a Ridge Racer and a console launch.
Yeah,
it just feels right.
It makes sense.
It felt right. And honestly, it was really cool to see the arcade version, like, reissued. Yep. Arcade Archives, the stuff Hamster do is just, like, I think really important for just getting a whole bunch of weird, lesser-known games out there. And I'm hoping now with that, they'll start doing some of that early 90s Namco stuff that hasn't really been emulated properly.
Yeah, cool.
Like, I want to see the Air Combat games, which are the precursors to Ace Combat. Yep. I want to see stuff like... Savalu, which is a 3D version of Xevious that's a bit different to the... It's like a rail shooter, like from first person.
Yeah, cool.
That appeared on Virtual Console on the Wii, but only in Japan. weird stuff. I want to see more of that stuff. Yeah, cool. Come on, Hamster. Come on, Bandai Namco. Get your shit together. Sorry.
Tim, are you going to abuse a publisher on our podcast too?
Probably not. Sorry. Probably not.
I'd say all this with love.
If I do, they will have earned it.
Yes.
No, I mean, I will have edited this. I'm probably going to be harassing Huso about recording a couple of these and like generic topics that we can keep in the bank. Because like the reason I cannot play Not Journey when it comes out is I will not be able to access a computer or a PlayStation.
Yes. Well, finish. Hurry up and finish Expedition 33 so we can do that one.
I have.
Ooh, yes.
I have. So, yeah, we need to get on gen. Like, quite recently, that's why I then went and finished up Cyberpunk. I'm, like, just sweeping up.
Sweeping up all the bits and pieces hanging over each other.
All these, like, four games that have, like, been playing over the course of the entire year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, nothing new coming out there, although I did actually stay true to my word and, like, just barely get that, like, top 11 Switch games out. Probably... Because more than expected, the Switch 2 does seem to, like, just pout. Because I was expecting Nintendo was going to, like, be very hard on limiting and, like, very, very strict with the emulation. But it seems they really are allowing that extra horsepower to, like, if that game has an unstable frame rate or digital resolution scaling, the Switch 2 is going to clean that shit up. Just
That's why I played Halo Hand of Fate 2, because it was notoriously framey on the Switch. And it just cleaned up nicely on the Switch 2.
Yeah, I want to go check out Astral Chain on that thing now, actually, when it arrives.
Yeah.
So yeah, like that list is maybe actually worth a look again, because you just like, scroll down that and go, well, the game was a bit framey or low resolution at the time, but it may be a bit better now.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And you can find your pretend beard on the sky.
On the skies.
On the skies.
On the skies.
And I'm Huso on everything that I still exist on. I'm not on the musky one anymore, so just on the blue sky. I've got a ton of shit up, actually. I've got a review today of the Sonic Generations on Switch. I did Yakuza on Switch.
More than planned.
I did Cyberpunk on Switch.
Yeah, I got an email or message from Paul, like asking if I wanted to do Cyberpunk on Switch, and I was like, going, how long can you wait for my unit to get to me? Because when you're listening to this, I may finally have it, but as we are recording, it is... in the post.
Yeah, it would have been a bit long. That would have upset him a little. But yeah, so I've done a whole bunch of stuff there with the Switch launch, and I'll probably do a bunch of... I've got previews coming up for, obviously, Sonic racing and things like that. So keep an eye out for that. Thank you for joining us, everyone, on this episode of the Pixel Cast. We will catch you in 2 weeks' time to talk some more waffle about video games.
Whatever. Again, I'm actually quite impressed that Houston did actually technically play a Yakuza game and only spoke about it at the very, very end of the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, at this point, I've spoken about Yakuza 0
a lot. You've played, like, these games a lot more than me now, which is impressive, because I was, like, a long-term fan. Like, I played the first one back on a PS2.
Yeah, yeah.